Shepherds versus Commissioner, Mr. Falk.
May it please the court. Indiana law requires the Indiana Department of Correction to maintain Indiana Sex and Violent Offender Registry. It's required to update the registry daily and to place it on the Internet. The department is responsible for making factual determinations concerning registration status. Although it has contracted some responsibilities to a private corporation, it agreed.
Was he a prisoner? This seems to be a class of prisoners and non-prisoners alike.
No, Your Honor, it's a class of persons who are required to register, and currently under Indiana law, the only persons who are required to register are non-prisoners.
So he's not a prisoner?
No, Your Honor.
And there are no prisoners in the class?
No, Your Honor. At an earlier time, prisoners were placed on the registry. My understanding is they are no longer placed on the registry, and of course they were not required to register. That was just done by the department in anticipation of their release.
So the procedures, though, that apply to people who are about to make the transition from the status of prisoner to not prisoner anymore,
yes,
are part of your focus?
Well, yes, Your Honor, because there are some registrants who can go through that procedure now, but of course, according to the deposition that was done some time ago, there are 11,000 active registrants. According to an earlier statement that was made in the contract that the DOC submitted to the federal government, there were 2,300 in jail or prison. So there are many prisoners who never go to jail, and certainly everyone who has been out since, I believe, April or May of 2011 when the new procedure went out have no access to that procedure. The other problem, of course, is the mistakes arise after you're out. The mistakes arise when you go to register and you're told you're a sexually violent predator. Even under the procedure that is being used in the department now, all the prisoners are told is, here are the offenses we're considering. They're not told whether they're going to be a sexually violent predator, whether they have to register for 10 years or a lifetime. They're not even told if they're a sex offender or a violent offender. All that information occurs after their release.
Isn't there a prematurity problem that until they're actually not allowed to live, you know, within 1,000 feet of a school or something like that, they've only been, you know, sort of defamed rather than actually have some more concrete consequence?
Well, no, Your Honor. Assuming we're talking about sexually violent predator, the minute you are designated, you have additional restrictions. You have to register every 3 months instead of every year. If you leave your home for more than 72 hours, you have to inform not only the law enforcement of the county you live in, but where you're going.
That's automatic. Those registration requirements are automatic upon
exactly
the classification.
Exactly. The minute you are so designated, you have that requirement.
Mr. Falk, I want to direct your attention to that form that's given to the prison. Is it your position that if that form not only listed the charges which are corrected, but if it had reached a conclusion at that point,
yes, sure,
that individual is now going to be, in other words, so he wouldn't have to self-interpret.
Exactly.
And was given some form of hearing in a reasonable period of time.
Yes, sure.
Yeah. That might cure the heart of your concern?
If that form is given to everyone when you're
out. Well,
I mean,
I'm talking about an exiting prisoner. I just don't seem to understand why both sides can't come to some agreement here on making the IDOC procedure such that you just don't tell the prisoner who's leaving after X amount of years that he or she has been convicted, which likely they are aware of.
Probably.
That have reflected on for some period of time.
It's been on their mind.
That conclusion is that you have become eligible and are going to go on a registry. Upon exiting, you've been determined to be somebody who's not only a candidate but is going to enter onto the registry. And if you have a problem with that, you should have some access in whatever period of time. Has there been any attempt at the trial level to reach that kind of accord?
Your Honor, I don't remember if I sent a formal settlement, but all along we've talked about a very simple paper procedure. You indicated hearing. We're not even saying in the first instance there needs to be a hearing. There just needs to be someone who pays attention.
Can review the initial determination.
Again, I'm not a computer person, but I assume somewhere there's a computer that is making that determination with a checklist. You are convicted of this crime, this means you are in this category, and that could be given not just to the prisoner, because many errors arise for non-prisoners and many sex offenders are not prisoners, but when the person registers and you're told you now have 20 days to let us know and we will get back to you. The other problem...
And they'll get back to you part I thought was critical.
I was going to say
that,
yeah.
Since now there's this negative, you know, if I don't feel like getting around to it, it's automatically denied.
That's correct. Someone has to get back to you. Someone has to pay attention.
You would be, under Matthews against Eldridge, you would be satisfied with a pretty simple procedure, it sounds
extremely
like.
Simple, Your Honor, because... If the mistake is pointed out, it's going to be corrected, one would hope. But what's the likelihood
of a mistake occurring after, let's say, an initial determination? Is your concern that when you show up either 3 months for your re-registration or a year, that something other than an address will be inputted incorrectly? I mean, I assume that the existing convictions are not going to change...
Well, that's
from registration to registration.
That's one would hope not, Your Honor. But, of course, take a look at Mr. Shepherds. Mr. Shepherds was erroneously listed as a sexually violent predator and a violent offender. That was corrected. But then, by the time the trial court entered its summary judgment determination or denial of summary judgment, its memorandum decision, he had been listed as a sexually violent predator again. So the problem is mistakes occur all the time because this may not be the most complicated calculus in the world, but there is some complications, and there's a human factor. And all we're asking for, Your Honor, is that you get a single piece of paper saying, here's our decision, here's, you know, checkbox. If you're not happy about it, you have 20 days to let us know, and we'll try and fix
it. That's initially, you would like that.
We would like that when there is new information put, when there are changes made.
Well, new information can be just because I moved.
No, I'm sorry, Your Honor. When there is a new status assigned. Now, the department under the Indiana law has the obligation after 10 years of notifying those persons that they are not registered anymore, so there will have to be some notice. But this is a very simple process. But the problem, of course, now is for most registrants, non-prisoners, they get nothing. They get no notice, and they get no opportunity to be heard. And since we're dealing with a clear liberty interest, they have to do something. And we're more than happy to work on the simplest procedure possible, but people are listed who are not offenders at all. People have mistaken statuses. That has to be corrected. There has to be due process for that.
Is your concern because once released and on a registry, the way the information is accumulated from local departments and sheriff's departments, that's where the error potential may flow from?
Your Honor, as I understand it, the department still maintains the registry. It's a secure database. And on that database is all the information that is input from the sheriffs, plus other information, probation officers, Social Security numbers, stuff that might be shared with the National Criminal Justice Database. So what you have is you have different repositories where information is coming in from, probation officers, sheriffs, but it's the department's duty under the law to ensure that that database from which everything flows is accurate. So the department is certainly in the position to see as information comes in and it makes those determinations, it's the one that should be issuing the notice.
Well, what kind of bureaucracy are we going to have? In other words, 3 years out, information flows in because of the regular registration process is taking place with ex-former prisoner.
That's correct.
We have to have a constant review process almost daily by the independent Department of Corrections?
Well, no, the department under the statute is required to daily update the registry, but when Ken Falk registers again, that information goes to the department, and the department will then print out something saying everything's the same, or we have made this change. And again, I assume there's a computer database doing that. Either you've made this change, you are now, because of this change in Indiana law, you are now listed as a sexually violent predator.
Or you continue in your current status.
So
after each registration, you would want an acknowledgement that whatever information was afforded is either current or changed in the minds of the department?
That's exactly correct. And as I said, I assume that's being done electronically anyway. And it would be very easy. Just print that out, give it to the person, tell them, here's who you contact, and if you contact us, we'll get back to you within 20 days.
Well, what you've just informed me of is what you assume. None of that was made apparent at the trial level, but whether that exists?
Your Honor, I think we argued that. I see my time is up. Let me answer the question if I could. We certainly, the contract that the DOC submitted talks about the fact that it continues to maintain the database. The trial court seemed to focus on the procedure available within the Department of Correction, which we think is flawed, but certainly doesn't reach the large majority of current registrants. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Falk. Ms. Barrow?
May it please the Court. The process that's afforded to incarcerated individuals is more comprehensive than what plaintiffs have alleged. If you look at page...
But don't we need to start with the people who are not incarcerated? Because, as Mr. Falk points out, a great number of people, the great majority of people with registration requirements, are not incarcerated. That's why they're registering. I mean, that's the whole reason society decided that having registries like this was a good idea, and everybody's assuming that it's a perfectly good idea. We just want to make sure that people are in the right box, basically. And there's no procedure for people who are outside.
That's correct. And in
and
general,
mistakes are made.
For
purposes
of this.
You would agree with that, too, right? Mistakes are made.
Yes, Your Honor.
Even we looked at Mr. Shepherd's entry on this registry, and it's very contradictory right at the moment. It shows him, you know, with a lifetime obligation to register, and it shows some of these flips and flops about whether he's sexually violent or not. And you know, heaven knows what's around for other members of the class. So that's a big concern of mine. And the other big concern of mine, even if you look at what's happening in DOC, is this presumed denial. Nobody has to ever look at anything. I mean, there's just a presumed denial of your challenge.
Okay, starting with the first question, people who are not incarcerated and the mistakes that are being made. This is a case under Section 1983, and the plaintiffs do have to show the requisite personal involvement of the DOC.
No, you're mistaken about that. This is a challenge to the state's policy. This isn't saying that the head of DOC did something wrong or that the warden of a prison did something wrong. This is a Monell-type challenge. Here's a structure that's put in place. This structure doesn't meet the basic Matthews against Eldridge due process criteria.
Well, the two problems with the plaintiff's case is they have chosen to sue only one of the two entities required by statute to be responsible for the sex offender
registry.
But you
never made a motion under Rule 19 saying that there was a failure to join a party who ought to be joined, and that's a waivable point.
Correct. Another point is that in the past few years, the record shows, especially on summary judgment, that the reality of how the sheriffs and the DOC administer this legislative plan for them to have joint responsibility is that only the sheriffs have the hands-on ability to change information on the website.
But that doesn't matter if Indiana statutes lodge this responsibility in the DOC. The DOC may delegate to independent contractors, it may delegate to local law enforcement personnel. If the DOC has a statutory obligation under Indiana law, then that's the end of that discussion, I think.
The issue is the plaintiff's insistence that they have to be afforded what they call a simple administrative process.
Yeah, a piece of paper, a certain amount of time to say, if you think something's wrong here, here's who to notify, and get it fixed.
Well,
I don't see what's so hard about that. Nobody's talking about elaborate in-person hearings, trial-type procedures, court procedures.
The
mandamus is clearly not good enough.
It begs the question, though, the piece of paper, how does DOC provide a piece of paper to people who have never been in the system, who have come from out of state?
Easy. There's a registration requirement. They have to show up and register.
Well, and again, the DOC could provide forms for the sheriffs to pass out, and maybe that's what the plaintiffs have in mind, or signs, pieces of paper at the sheriff's office. I don't think plaintiffs expect DOC to assign its own employees to be present in all 92 counties.
Oh, no, but I mean, I'm a little bit shocked at what you're saying, because you seem to think that DOC can run this registry, which, as you point out, has to deal with people perhaps from all over the country without any information. They just sort of throw people on the list or take them off the list without any information whatsoever. Now, if there is information, then that should be shared with the person who has this burden of registering.
The process, there is no evidence that members of the class do not have due process in the form of existing remedies.
There are no existing remedies. So unless you think zero is the level of process for the non-incarcerated people. Now, there is some process for the people in transition, which I think is maybe okay in part and maybe not okay in part, but there's none for people who are out.
If I could refer the court to the case that's cited in the reply brief, Jared Coates versus State. He is an example of somebody who's a member of the class who, through a very simple procedure, filing a motion for mandate and injunctive and declaratory relief, obtained the correction of the website in that he should not have had to register in the first place.
I can't believe the Indiana courts want this burden. I mean, it seems to me insane to think that everybody should have to go off and file, especially when mandate is a difficult remedy under most legal systems, and I would suspect Indiana's, to obtain.
If I could just refer the court on the subject of DOC's procedure for incarcerated individuals. In addition to the notice they're given, they're also given a form called a specimen that does give them all of the information that plaintiffs are complaining they're not receiving. They're informed whether they have to register, whether they're on the violent offender registry, whether they're going to be classified a sexually violent predator.
But what the specimen doesn't do for them, that's why I said I think maybe in part, given the specimen, the people who are in prison are better off than the people who got diversionary dispositions or who are out of prison. But what the specimen doesn't cure is the fact that if there's a seeming error in some of that information, there's no assurance that anybody will ever do anything about it because of this put it on the desk and ignore it structure that the department has adopted.
The deemed denied provision is to ensure finality so that after the period of time.
But it doesn't ensure that anybody ever looks at it.
And there's
the fact that you don't even say, yes, this looks right to me is.
In the year that this process has been in place. There's no indication that has actually happened. They also insist.
How would there be, though? How could there be? People have no idea what's happened. Somebody could just be tossing in the wastebasket every time one of these things come in, and you just have a nice long list of deemed denieds.
The district court specifically found that the process provided incarcerated individuals does satisfy due process, and the DOC.
And that's what we're reviewing right now, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Judge Flom asked you whether there would be some substantial bureaucratic burden if you were to implement the procedure suggested by Mr. Falk.
Yes, as a practical matter, the DOC would have to ensure that in all 92 counties there would be a means, probably a form or a piece of paper, I don't know if it would have to be in multiple languages, given to individuals as they register. The plaintiffs insist on pre-deprivation remedies, and it's hard to understand, as a practical matter, how that could be achieved in all instances. If the DOC would not have any control over whether the sheriffs actually give people the notice. If people do appeal and the DOC looks at the records and say, well, we're not changing this, then the plaintiffs want a hearing before an impartial panel or hearing officer. Well, that would not be a DOC employee, so they would have to hire an individual or individuals to hear these cases. So it would not be just a simple matter of handing them some kind of a notice. The actual hearing process, there'd be the question, is it subject to the Administrative Orders and Procedures Act? It's not, there's no such thing as a simple administrative process.
The class has sued the wrong defendant?
Well, I'm not in a position to say that because in order to obtain complete relief, it's not just the DOC that's in a position to obtain relief. The DOC could say, yes, you should not be a sexually violent offender. The DOC cannot physically change the website to remove that designation at this point, and that was shown on summary judgment.
Wait, who has the website?
Well, that would be the sheriffs.
That's because DOC contracted with them. Seems like a bizarre argument to me.
The contract is with the Sheriff's Association for the technical assistance in connecting the databases to provide and transmit the information. That's the only entity that has any kind of connection with all 92 counties. And so that is the job of the Sheriff's Association, if I could continue my answer. But the hands-on alteration of information on the website is done at the local level.
Okay.
Can I ask Ms. Barrow, I just would like to clear up, for me anyway, what I think could be a simple fix, at least for incarcerated prisoners about to be released. I appreciate you have the problem of out-of-state people that move in and they've got to register and the like. But assuming the greatest number of people that will be affected are those who have been convicted in Indiana and have spent time, because for these kinds of crimes, these are not normally non-custodial situations. I don't quite understand why the departing prisoner, when is informed of his potential to be on the registry, why the conclusion couldn't be made based on the information you give the departing prisoner that he or she has been convicted of whatever, that they are about to enter, not that they may go on the registry. Why can't that conclusion be made during that, let's say, the 6 months prior to release?
Is the question regard the conclusion being a
that you are going to immediately you're going to be placed on the registry? Not that you may be based on these two or three convictions.
No, that is what they're told. That's the information provided in the specimen as is as described on page 822 of the materials, that they're told, yes, you will be required to register and as a violent offender or a sexually violent predator. They're given all of that specific information.
You're saying they're told upon departure that they are targeted immediately to be gone on a registry?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Barrow. Yeah. Mr. Faw, is there any time left? No, we'll give you a minute.
As far, Your Honors, as to whose duty this is, clearly the Indiana law and the department concedes that it is responsible for its prisoners, but Indiana Code 11-8-8-9 specifically says that for a sex of violent offender not committed to the department, the probation officer, office of the sentencing court, shall transmit to the copy a copy of information concerning the offense and any other information required by the department to make a determination concerning sex or violent offender registration. The entity that is charged by Indiana law is the department. Yes, the individual sheriffs are involved in the taking the photograph, getting information concerning address, putting that information on the database. But the database is maintained by the department. The database is updated daily, and that's the department's explicit and sole obligation. And the department is responsible, according to Mr. Myers, who's in charge of this department, for ensuring the accuracy of information on the Internet.
Mr. Falk, did anything occur below that would indicate the number of people who would be eligible to go on the registry that didn't enter the portals of the department's, one of its institutions? I mean, how many people in Indiana are convicted of crimes that could suggest that they would be eligible for the registry who don't get custody?
It's actually, the answer is no, Your Honor. There is no specific evidence, but I believe it's a significant number because there are many C or even D felonies that can make someone a sex offender in Indiana. And we did cite the court to one Indiana case of someone who picked up probation. So I do not think...
The statutory rape, is that the usual...
Possession of pornography can be...
Lesser offenses that can get you on a registry...
Yes, but something like a possession of child pornography can be, again, I don't do criminal law, but I think it can be either C or D felony. So, I mean, there are some, quote-unquote, low-level felonies, and those people will not end up in prison. And they'll go right to probation, or they'll spend a year or two awaiting trial and get time served. Mm-hmm. My time is up. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Falk and Ms. Farrell.